What's up, party people? This is Chris DeRose, and with me for the second time on the show, his second appearance, Simon Dixon over here has a lot of people angry in the Starcoin community, and I guess we're going to get him in here, have him make some explanations and see what's going on over there, what went wrong, what went right, and what his involvement is. So, Simon, let's do a quick overview. You tell me where I'm wrong. Certainly, I haven't watched the last video that we did. It's not fresh in my mind. But certainly Bank to the Future is something you're very involved with. I think prior to that, there was Maxcoin, really, at the very start of it. After that, there was Starcoin. Then there was Starcoin 2. And now we're kind of here today, and you have mixed involvement in some of these things. Is that about right, or you want to clarify something?
Yeah, I'd like to clarify that. So we at Bank to the Future, we were starting around 2011. And we spent about 4 years on regulations before we actually launched. Now, one of our first customers was, in fact, our first customer was StartJoin, which was a crowdfunding platform that went on to launch a altcoin as well. And we raised funding for it. We were one of the investors in it. And then from there, you know, we went on to, as our capacity as a minimum shareholder, do what we can to support the company. We did some integrations into Bank to the Future, but my involvement in Startcoin or StartJoin is nothing more than an investor and someone that raised finance for it. So Maxcoin.
Well, I think you, at the very least, did you not do some ventures
in this project? Explain to me what it is that StartJoin and StartCoin is.
I'm not even very clear on that. Why don't you tell people?
So, StartJoin is a crowdfunding platform, and it was founded by Max Kaiser and a guy called Jamie Scott. It was the idea was that they were going to create a crowdfunding platform, and then they were going to integrate a pre-mined coin into the platform. This was, by the way, just to give context and background, prior to this, I'd only ever really been involved in Bitcoin. And this was our first company that we worked with that had any involvement in an altcoin. And I was really excited at the time. If you go back to my videos, I did a TEDx talk in, I think it was May 2014. And prior to this, I'd been working on regulations of equity crowdfunding in the UK, which later led to the Jobs Act. And I was really into the whole crowdfunding stuff. If you look back on my past videos, I was really pushing the concept of what crowdfunding could do for the economy, what crowdfunding could do for the world. I covered it in my book.
I remember you talked about on the show. We'll get to that in a second, though. What was the function of StartCoin in the StartJoin system as proposed?
So essentially, they were giving away people StartCoins, and people could raise finance with StartCoins. And the concept was just to use the fact that they have a cryptocurrency to give to the people that wanted to contribute to projects, and they did lots of different things with it. Didn't really materialize the way it was meant to.
Was this a smart idea at the time, in your estimation, or were you worried about it then?
To tell you the truth, I'm not going to back out. At the time, I thought it was a good idea. I really wasn't familiar with the economics of altcoins. I was really into Bitcoin. I hadn't paid much attention at all to altcoins. And then this just seemed like an interesting concept that caught my imagination at the time.
But it sounds like, I guess, since Debbie decided that was not such a good idea.
Since my involvement, anything that we've been involved with that has something to do with an altcoin has caused us exponentially more grief than the other things that we've dealt with. So when we invest in companies that involve an altcoin, we just find all these weird dynamics, weird economics. And the more and more I've been involved in the market, I've come to an understanding of what really makes Bitcoin work and how that's not going to be replicated from someone else through a company. My opinions have changed a lot about crowdfunding and my experiments with investing in companies that are involved in altcoins has not been the most positive.
Well, we'll get to that in a second, because that does sound very interesting. You especially being a fairly early proponent of these things and having seen this in the battlefields.
With the Start Join platform, I think, if I understand it, you had raised money yourself for a mining venture.
Yes. Yeah, so after Start Join and Startcoin came along, at the time, Max came to me and said, "Look, the community really want to mine Start Coins, and we were looking at how we could support that." And then we put them in touch with some people that could do that. And then we thought it would be a good idea to do a funding round for some Startcoin mining on Bank to the Future, which turned out to be a very bad idea.
Well, how much did you raise?
I can't remember exactly. I'd have to look back, but I think it was a couple of hundred grand. So most of it came in Startcoin. Then you start to experience the challenges of why crypto and particularly altcoins is very bad for crowdfunding, because the volatility means the whole project can go messed up.
You see how when you raise money in Startcoin, you have to then sell the Startcoin, which then lowers the value for the investors.
The economics is ridiculous. So, you know, it didn't, yeah. You know, it's not my finest moment, but
I appreciate your humility with us now. That goes a long way. I think that for me, I'd rather see you own your mistakes than double down on ridiculousness, which is what a lot of guests do on
the
show.
Yeah, so the economics just don't work. You give away the coins, then people just dump them. The project raises finance, then the project needs to dump them in order to pay for the finance. And then it's just a question of how much buy pressure the speculators are willing to produce before the whole thing crashes and just becomes, you know, enters the wilderness. So the economics just don't make sense. And that's why crowdfunding and an altcoin just don't work.
Well, that's interesting to hear. Let's talk about, we're going to get to that, because I have a bunch of questions about that. I think a lot of people want me to roast you today. And, we have these people that come on the show, and when they talk about their mistakes, like, it seems like you are, there's not much to roast, quite frankly. For me, I am gloating a little bit in the sense that I do believe that I could have seen some of this stuff coming. I don't know if my record at the time spoke up to that matter, but it's okay. Because, like, if you're sharing your story, this is the kind of thing that I like for other people to hear. Because there's no shame, really, in making mistakes and then, like, realizing it after the fact. I think the shame is if, like, you make mistakes and then you double down.
But I would like to say, you know, my mistake was investing in these things. It was just I was speculating on it just as much as anyone else.
Well, we're going to get into some of that. Okay. So let me talk about your mining ventures, though, first. That sounds very interesting. Everybody who comes to this space who's relatively new, there's like stages of Bitcoin comprehension. And one of them is the stage where they're going to print free money. And mining is usually that stage. What did you set out to do? And then what actually happened?
So we were just simply providing, putting together the ability for the Startcoin community to mine, because at the time, there was no way of doing that without actually being a miner. So the Start Join and Startcoin community were really pushing for this thing. And we put it together, and I guess if the price of Startcoin continues to rise, then there's a possibility that it might make money. But if the price of Startcoin crashes, it doesn't cover the cost and it ends up being a really bad investment.
I had read at some point that you had your own mining facility. Then I read that you cloud mined, and I had read that it was your mining company. Now, you would have me believe that you just invested in this and you did not have any form of an ownership stake past that investment.
So we put this together. We had a partnership with Genesis Mining. There was no way of doing Startcoin mining at the time. And then they put that together for us and gave some favorable terms for the investors in that particular product.
So when investors invested, did you get like a position that was, I had read at some level that I think either in Start Join or in this mining venture that you had taken some percentage of the amount raised for, like, I don't know exactly what, if it wasn't just like personal inventory of the coin or if it was outright paycheck.
No, we've never received any of the Startcoin pre-mine. We had no management and control over that.
But the mining venture
was the terms were outlined. It was 15% of the coins mined went to us, but we ended up reinvesting them all in trying to make it profitable for a bit longer by pivoting it to X11 mining when the Startcoin
hit. Okay, we'll get into that. Hold on. So, I think, I don't know if you're being 100. If I'm the one with the mistake here, if you are, but it sounded like 10 minutes ago that you would told me that you did not have like an ownership stake in the mining venture.
No, we bought 15% of the coins each day. That was the terms of the investment.
Okay, so it does sound like you have some.
7.5% went to Starkcoin Holdings.
Who's us, by the way?
Banks of the Future.
And that is principally yourself and Max Keiser?
No, Max Keiser's not involved in Banks of the Future. He's one of our clients.
Okay. Was there a time when he was involved in Banks of the Future?
No.
Okay. So, I thought there was.
Yeah.
Max is not part of
Banks of the Future. He was one of our clients. And when we first launched, we were working together. We raised finance for StartJoin. And then, he was giving us some exposure on the show. And he pitched a concept called Crowd Factor, which was a show that he wanted to do online that we did several episodes for. And then I kind of went through my...
So what did he get in exchange for the Bank of the Future coverage? Like what was offered to him?
When you say what, Crowd Factor?
No, Bank of the Future.
So he gave you free press for StartJoin.
But Bank of the Future is his own company, no?
Correct. Yeah. So StartJoin.
So that Max is not a principal.
Max Kaiser's got nothing to do with Bank of the Future. Yeah.
But he promotes it heavily, does he not?
He did. Yeah.
Okay. And what did he get for promoting it heavily? Because
nothing other than we were helping him make, with StartJoin in terms of raising funding for him.
All right. Did you pay him any percentage of a commission or flat rate or no. monthly rate or recurring cost or what? We have to ask all the time. Did Max ever get a check made out to him with his name on it from Banks of the Future?
No. Then there's...
Did he get a cryptocurrency payment?
No.
Okay.
No, he's not an equity holder.
I think that's all of them.
He's a client of ours. We, just with every investment that goes through our platform, we try and help them in any way we can. With Max, he was particularly receptive to the help, so we helped him where we could. He also gave us some promotion in return.
And what's the role of Bitcoin Capital in all of this, too? Like, what is Max's role in Bitcoin
Capital?
So
that's something we did work with Max on. So Bitcoin Capital was a venture. Max and myself wanted to invest in Bitcoin companies. And we put together, he was doing that at the time through Heisenberg Capital, was one of his firms. And then we decided that we wanted to start Bitcoin Capital. Basically 50% was available to investors, 25% was me, and the other 25% was Max. But Max gave his shares to Starkcoin Holdings.
In all these projects, it seems like obfuscation is generally where like things iterate towards. As there become problems, we start new crowd funds and new companies and tokens. And I haven't familiarized myself with the entire history. Okay, so Max gave his tokens away. Why was it that he gave those tokens away? Was there more liability in holding it than there was in potential profit, or like what was the reasoning behind
when
that?
When you say give them away, which part are you referring to? His business model as part of StartJoin, or?
No, as I understand it, his holdings in Bitcoin Capital.
Oh, he gave them StartCoin Holdings. I mean, he was building assets for the company at the time.
He gives out equity, and like that's the way he is. Or like there's a payment that was made, or there's a liability attached.
There's no payment. All of the funds went to StartCoin Holding. Anything, StartCoin Holding was him at the time.
Wait, so at the time he was in. In fact, involved in StartCoin, but not StartJoin, or he was involved in both StartJoin and StartCoin.
Let me give you the overview so we're all clear.
I need to make a chart or something of
There's
this.
There's a company called StartCoin Holdings, which raised finance through Bank to the Future. And then StartCoin was something that was created by Max and StartCoin Holdings, whatever you want to call that. It was a decentralized coin that was designed to integrate with the crowdfunding platform StartJoin. StartJoin was a platform, and the platform was owned, the company that owned it and operated it and managed it was StartCoin Holdings.
These companies that we're talking about, how many people are at them? Is it the same 10 people or like 3 people at each of these ventures?
So there's only one venture there, that's StartCoin Holdings.
Okay, yeah. But then there's also Blockchain Capital, and then there's Bank to the Future.
So, okay, Bank to the Future, we're 14 staff. StartJoin was one of our clients. I'm the CEO and co-founder, and Bank to the Future is my full-time focus. That's what I do.
What did you said you were start your CEO
Bank
of,
to the Future.
Were you saying you were CEO? Okay. Yeah. Not StartJoin.
No, yeah, not okay. StartJoin. StartJoin is a venture that was co-founded by, and again, I can say the things that this is public information. I can't say the things which are shareholder confidential information, but all of this is public, so I'm comfortable saying this. The StartJoin was a platform owned by Startcoin Holdings, and Startcoin Holdings was the company that was doing all this stuff revolved around Start. The involvement between Bank to the Future and Startcoin Holdings was that we raised finance for it. It was a client. And as we were in the early days, when we were excited, we integrated Startcoin as a payment method. We later revoked that and realized that doesn't help us.
No.
Yeah. Bitcoin Capital was just a separate venture between Max and myself, but rather than the 25% being held in his name, he gave it to Startcoin Holdings. So while Startcoin Holdings, the situation that we're in right now and why it's kind of blown up at this point is that Max and Jamie left the project. And so now one of the investors, Carl Gray, is the existing CEO, and the community haven't been too happy with the way that he's communicating and executing things. So
no, they're not. He's public enemy number one with the community. It seems he's not being held in good favor.
And so, what
is your opinion of how he's been handling things? Are you inclined to believe that he's doing a good job, or do you think that you too have some apprehensions? Maybe
I've got a meeting with Carl. I don't want to say anything slanderous because at the moment I'm here represent to try and get the best result for investors at the moment. And, you know, things like that aren't really going to help. But what I will say is that there's at Bank to the Future, now that we've done about 70 odd funding rounds, there's some people which are good at investor relations. There's some which are very bad at investor relations. The people that are very bad at investor relations promise the world under deliver. The good, the ones that are good at investor relations under promise and over deliver. I think Cole has had some challenges in managing the expectations of the community versus what they can deliver. I don't think that the original vision and all the original team have left. So it's not in a very good shape right now.
It sounds like you're in the hot seat here. Like, because you have personal risk in terms of a platform that you seem to care about greatly, which is Bank to the Future. You have personal risk in the form of, I guess, funds invested in Bitcoin Capital still.
Yeah.
You also have risk in the form of, I guess, I mean, at some level you can Carl, or at least kick him off the platform or publicly denounce him. And then there's risk to Bank to the Future again, or there's risk if you support him and then Bank to the Future gets thrown into us. So like, who do you work for exactly here? Like, what are your obligations into who?
We work for investors, I would say.
How much of your money does Carl manage right now? Like, how much of your equity does he represent currently?
When you're saying, so basically the only connection with Carl is that he's now the, I think, CEO or MD or the guy behind Startcoin Holdings.
Isn't Startcoin Holdings something that you have some risk exposure to, though? Max gave his shares to...
No, I invested in the seed round with all the other investors, and that's it.
I'm trying to remember the flowchart I made in my head, though. So Bitcoin Capital was something that had equity that was given to Startcoin Holdings. Am I right about that?
Yeah, and Startcoin Holdings
so doesn't that give
25%
you...
of Bitcoin Capital. So there's some assets.
So then you're in a business.
There's some assets in the
You're
company.
In a business with him.
Where this kind of all blew up, and I guess the community said, get Chris in, because an email was sent to all of their newsletter.
Yes, I saw this email.
And to me, it was... Yeah.
Explain the email. Explain the email
so
for the audience.
The first time we heard about the email was when we received the email. And so my immediate reaction was, Carl, you know, we haven't discussed this. If the company's moving away from UK, then we need to figure out a strategy for how investors get exposure to these assets. But there's regulatory considerations, and this is private shareholder information. And so I had a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, which I later regretted, but emotions got the better of me. And, you know, I kind of just said, we don't know anything about this. And then I contacted Carl, and now we've got a meeting to kind of clear it up.
All right, hold on. Let me back up real quick.
Yeah.
How much did you invest personally in Bitcoin Capital?
In Bitcoin Capital?
Yeah.
Or Starkcoin Holdings? Bitcoin Capital, we were a shareholder, and we put up the seed capital to get everything incorporated and ready.
Who is we?
Oh, sorry,
you and
Mac,
who, you and Mac?
Yeah, me personally.
So how much did you put into
about
it?
About 10 grand.
Yeah. Okay. How much is that equity worth currently?
I'd have to look at the net asset values, but...
You think more or less?
Yeah, I mean, more. I mean, my 25%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, like by an order of magnitude, or like not that much?
It's probably worth so maybe $1 million or so, or something like that. So an order of magnitude, yeah.
Okay, so you've got like $1 million worth of exposure there. Fine. All right. And that's yours personally, or that's Bank to the Future's
money?
That's
mine personally.
Okay. All right, so it's not a small amount of money. Where did Carl come from exactly? Like, what's his background? Because this guy just kind of showed up in my mind. Where'd you guys find
him? Firstly, Max found him. I first heard of Carl when he did an appearance on the Kaiser Report. And then before we got involved in raising funding for Starkcoin Holdings, he was the seed investor in Starkcoin Holdings.
What's his professional experience?
I have no idea. I don't know, because Carl wasn't involved in when we were dealing with this, and then later he became
so Max just kind of stuck him there. So do you think Max has a good idea of where this guy's experience came from, or do you think that Max just kind of threw him there and got out of this
thing? Since then I haven't heard from Max, so you know, he left Starkcoin Holdings.
Are you and Max like divorced at this point, or are you guys still hanging out?
We never had the actual divorce. We just haven't heard from each other. So,
yeah, but that's kind of weird because you guys were like really close to each other for a while.
It is weird. Yeah.
Was this the issue? Is this the issue, I guess, that kind of made that happen?
I'm not sure. You know, I just didn't hear back from Max at one point, and I haven't heard back from him since.
Do you think that Max knows this is a big liability and he doesn't want anything to do with it?
I think my personal belief, and again, this is just opinion. This isn't based upon.
Yeah.
You know, I think the company hasn't. It came up with an idea. I bought into, the community bought into. It turned out, I think it's a bad idea. And there reaches a point where you close a company. The problem with cryptocurrency is you create this thing that goes on forever. So with a company, you close it. You say, here's what went wrong, and then investors are unhappy. Or you tell them we did everything we could, and here's why it went wrong. With a coin, it goes on forever, and it's you know, all these coins that are getting created, people are creating lifetime liabilities here, and for sure.
Oh yeah, perpetual.
Yeah, and
perpetual liabilities.
And so, you know, and this is, as I said, the original thing we come back to. We think crowdfunding's a very problematic idea. We think altcoins are very problematic.
When did Max Kaiser give the capital over from Bitcoin Capital? Was that like months ago, or like a year ago, or recently?
No, it was he put it in. It was originally put into the name of Starkcoin Holdings right from the beginning.
I'm trying to figure out what risk exposure Max has. Has Max basically wiped his hands clean of exposure entirely?
I need to speak to Carl and get an update on where the capital structure is and who the directors are and what's happened. But
oh man,
yeah. As far
how many people? How many people are working with Carl? Like, is this just Carl's thing at this point, or is it like an office somewhere?
I haven't received any further updates since I haven't heard from Matt. So, yeah.
But you should know a little bit more about our company.
Correct.
Than just like,
I mean, you know, that's
Carl.
Where you know it, when the community are going nuts at Carl, it has, you know, some kind of effect. But when we email, we tend to get a reply, and we've been requesting some further information from Carl for quite a while, and now it hit the point where this email was sent, so that triggered an event where we're now speaking with Carl to figure out and what we can do for the investors.
Some of the allegations include, and I think this might even be substantiated, that he's been dumping inventory into a pump prior to that email. Does that sound about right to you?
I don't know. I don't know what they've been doing with the pre-mine.
It seems to me that that was thrown out there. I don't know if you actually know. So if someone's watching this and has that comment, or somebody in the Exotica channel can substantiate that. That
is one of the accusations being thrown out. The Starcoin community following all these addresses, and the pre-mine addresses were published, and they're doing a lot of the work on that.
So we're going to back up a little bit. I mean, that's the big scandal, okay? But I want to learn about, I want to hear some lessons learned, because that seems like that's still ongoing. It seems like you already see where there's a lot of problems here, and it seems like you're waiting for Carl to give you some updates, which I will say you probably should have had, seeing your exposure to various parts of this creation that you had a part in, and that is completely crazy to me. Mm. Someone in the channel here, the Exotica, says, did Simon invest in Bitcoin Capital? The answer was yes. He put $10,000 into Bitcoin Capital. I think you already stated that on record. Yeah. Okay. So there you go. Guest 254. Now fucking change your name. What did you learn from mining? Like what did you, I never got to that part. I really wanted to ask you, what did you learn from mining? Like, okay. So you learned that mining Starcoin had problems. Yeah. And then I think you guys decided to mine Ethereum.
Yeah.
And what happened?
That turned out to be a very good investment. However, I'll put the disclaimer in. If you had bought the coins, you would have made more money than if you had mined the coins. And that's really the reality of mining. So, you know, people that are investing in mining, it's kind of like a dollar cost averaging for someone that doesn't know how to buy and doesn't want to time the market. But if you are willing to try and time the market and invest, then you're probably going to perform better.
Okay. I had heard that you guys weren't able to do Ethereum mining, that you instead did Dash mining.
No, we did Ethereum mining. Oh, sorry. So we're talking the Ethereum mining thing was a separate pitch on Bank to the Future that did well.
Okay. Yeah. So this, okay. There was yet another.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Okay. Then the Starcoin
okay, so
one.
The other when it, company that you did with the same focus as the other. Okay, so you have like two companies with two different investors here that do like are competing theoretically, which is very weird to me.
Say that again. How's that? Compete?
Miners compete. Right. They're zero-sum games.
I mean, we just had an investment opportunity for those that wanted to invest in Ethereum mining. That one went well. That's that one. We did a Starcoin mining one. That didn't go well. And we had to pivot it to X11 mining for Dash in order to try and keep the payouts going a little bit longer, which did keep it going a little bit longer, which we paid for.
Hold on. I want to interrupt this. The channel is saying that the $10,000 you put into Blockchain Capital came from a fundraise that you did on Start Join.
No.
Is that out of your personal money or that was out of a crowdfund money?
My personal money. Oh, right. Actually, sorry. You. I did actually. Yeah. So when we originally started working with the idea behind Bitcoin Capital came from a crowd fund. And we literally, Max and I were talking about doing this venture fund. And then we put the idea on Start Join and they said, if we raise 10 grand, we'll do it. We did it. We raised that through Start Join. That's correct.
You did, in fact, the $10,000 that you put into Bitcoin Capital was in fact, the money from a
crowdfund? There was that, but most of that money was in Start Coins, so I put my own money in as well.
So how much of your money did you invest, and how much of that, then, of Blockchain Capital? Yeah. And so then how much was invested, how much was raised on the Bank to the Future platform, I guess, or any platform?
For Bitcoin Capital?
We
raised about $1 million or so.
Okay, so you raised 10 grand and you contributed 10 grand and you raised a million? Okay, sounds weird, but okay. Interesting. And then you went ahead and invested in another company for the purposes of creating more investments. Does that seem reasonable to you at this point, or I guess... No.
The way it's been described is probably not, but no, I mean, if you bunch this all together, but you remember these were different projects over a period of about a year or so.
I know, but you like start like multiple mining endeavors from like different pools. So like you have like a mining endeavor here that competes with your right hand competes with your left. You're like you're arm wrestling yourself, both in terms of your mining operations. And
I don't think these are small amounts raised. This isn't significant mining operations that are actually taking hash power from one to the other. These were just
that might be. These were just
our investors,
I get that. Like,
saying
McDonald's invests in Chipotle, but like typically when McDonald's invests in Chipotle, they'll do something like, well, there's a different demographic here and there's a different sector, so we actually aren't competing with ourselves. We're expanding our demographic. Yeah. And in this case, it's like not the same at all. Like that.
Okay. Well, we, you know, our investors were, they request certain investment opportunities, and where we can, we put them together.
Yeah, no, I get what, but that's the real truth. That's really what it is that you and I get it. Cause look, we're going to build a case here. Look, what I know is that these people asked to be scammed in any capacity that they were scammed. I know this. I've seen this over and over and over again. And a number of them are watching, and a lot of people want me to say, Simon, you are 100% to blame. Or Max, or what's this guy, Carl? But I know that these people were literally dying to hand you their money. I know it because I've been living this place for years, and I've seen many, many cases of people literally dying to hand me money over for these, like, you know, affinity scams or Ponzi schemes or tokenized anything. So I get that. I really understand that. When you're running a business, you set out to start a business for fundraising, and all these people want to spend their money with you, you got to do it. But it is a little weird to me that you found yourself here with like a fiduciary duty that requires like, I don't know, like crazy advanced algebra and like a bunch of like plotting on a map or something. Yeah. And you kind of wove this tangled weave of weirdness.
Yeah. That you got yourself into. That's the situation we're in. For us, everything with the name Starting has been more problematic than we would have wanted.
How far would any of this have gone if you were going through the NYSE or NASDAQ or some non-crypto corporate regulatory environment for equity and crowd fundraising?
These wouldn't be public offerings. No. I mean, they've tried to do a mining public offering and they didn't get approved.
Do you think that there's something to be said for the regulations this at this point in your Bitcoining? In terms
you remember we're deep in the regs. I mean, we're registered.
No, you're not though. You know you're not because you wouldn't have had to spend a lot of time working on your case. So like you may very well be spending a lot of time to pass the regulatory muster. But what everybody knows, yourself included, is that you are regulatory arbitraging, which is okay, which I think is fine, which is in fact a form of regulatory compliance, albeit one of extraordinary deviation from convention.
Well, no, because we're registered with our monetary authority. We have to follow the same rules. We only deal with accredited investors now. We flipped from crowdfunding. I was originally a big advocate of crowdfunding. And after doing it for a while, I completely pivoted. I changed my mind. I look back at some of the videos and I say, who's that idiot?
It's okay. I do the same stuff. It's A-okay. Yeah. We're here to learn from our mistakes, hopefully share them with the noobs, although I highly doubt it. Those people are fucking obstinate. So you went. How much of the risk that you're currently dealing with here in all of this mess has to do with pre-accredited investor money versus post-accredited investor?
Startcoin Holdings was actually the only company that we did under our original UK model of crowdfunding. And we then pivoted to accredited investors, private offerings, and just changed the model. And we didn't want any retail investors because we just found it too problematic.
How many of these other companies were raising money on Bank to the Future, involved in Bitcoin Capital, StartJoin, StartCoin, StartCoin Holdings?
No, it's just StartCoin Holdings was the only one we did under the UK model. It was our first deal on the platform. The crowdfunded model.
Okay. How many people are in that venture then? In StartCoin Holdings? How many people contributed?
I'd have to look back at the facts, but at that time it was done. So our original model with crowdfunding was just a direct investment model. We were the facilitator for the deal and people end up, the company gets a load of shareholders. Now we do a different model.
Is it thousands, hundreds?
So I think it's a couple 10? Hundred there. Yeah.
Okay. And can people still invest right now in blockchain capital?
No. It's Bitcoin capital.
Bitcoin capital. Sorry, blockchain capital is the other.
And I do want to say that was the one thing we did get wrong. We were calling blockchain, you know, we were sticking our guns with Bitcoin rather than changing the name to blockchain, even though that might have been the attractive thing to do at the time.
Yeah, you probably, I don't know what to tell you. Did you learn with mining that like mining is a heavily commoditized business? And that when you buy inventory, you're buying it from quite literally the most efficient source on the planet. and that for you to get it any cheaper, you'd have to be inordinately specialized.
Yeah, and in mining. I totally agree. So we've been, you know, during this scaling debate, I've been spending a lot of time in China and met a lot of the miners, been, you know, visiting a lot of the miners. And yeah, it's a hugely specialized area. And China has a major advantage in that market.
So, okay, the next thing, how about this? If you had put your money into your $10,000 into Bitcoin mm-hmm. versus into Bitcoin Capital, would you have done better or worse?
You would have done better with Bitcoin, without a doubt.
No, would you
yes.
have done better or worse?
Well, I have.
You would have done better
Bitcoin
with
my Bitcoin investments have done better than.
Well, hold on. You said you put $10,000 of your own money into Bitcoin Capital?
Yeah.
How much would that be worth today then in Bitcoin? 40,000?
I mean,
but then you told me earlier that you have $1 million or so in equity in Bitcoin Capital, no?
Yes. So, oh, sorry.
So you would have better.
Okay, sorry. I thought you were talking about me being an investor and putting the money in versus Bitcoin. But no, I mean, you know, as the person managing the Bitcoin Capital venture, there's more money in the equity of the company.
Yeah. It's okay. Let's just be honest. It's no problem.
Yeah.
What about the investors, the people who are not yourself who put money into Bitcoin Capital? Would they have done better if they had bought Bitcoin or if they had bought Bitcoin Capital?
So private equity is a long-term time frame. You've got to get exits before profits are realized. So at the moment, without a doubt, they would have done much better with Bitcoin.
Do you see that as being a little problematic for the industry, though, that these claims are made and these, like, I mean, it seems like you kind of did it yourself and it's okay because you're here, you're telling people this, but do you think that the structure of crowdfunding is such that the universe favors the early entry people who have the most information, such that the later entry people are over time indefinitely more exposed to greater risk with less reward?
I'm not sure if that's unique to crowdfunding, but that's definitely the same with any investing in early stage ventures. There's the potential for more tomfoolery and more people being involved. It's very problematic, crowdfunding and investments.
I get that that's not necessarily unique to crowdfunding, except that I think that we have a regulatory structure that prevents fanciful, untested claims from inexperienced
completely.
People.
Yeah, the regulatory structure means that you have to, you know, verify the information that's being pitched, and you have prospectus requirements, and the regulatory structure is designed there for consumer protection.
Would Carl have been able to take the position that he'd taken in this venture with a publicly regulated security and not have been able to publicly tell everybody off the, like the top of their head even what his background was, where he was from, how he was selected?
No, that would have been a disclosure and a public announcement in the public market.
Yeah. So where do we go from here? Because it seems like you've tried this route and there's a lot of lessons learned. And meanwhile, all around us are people trying the same thing themselves without any cognizance of what is an inevitable discovery, I would suggest. Maybe you would agree. What do you think your role is now going forward? Do you think maybe you should speak out a little bit more about what the problems and lessons were? I mean, you're doing it here, which is great. I really appreciate that.
It's taken us approximately a year and a half to try and remove the word crowdfunding from the vocabulary of what we do. And we've been working very, very hard to make sure that we're taking on the right investors, that we're doing this the correct way, that the correct procedures and structures are in place. Where is crowdfunding going? My personal belief is that retail investors should not be investing in private equity. And I agree with the regulators in that. The ICO market is very hard. And I jot down some notes of some of the problems that we've observed, you know, from our experience over the last 2 years, which if we've got time, we can go through those. But the ICO market I was in a Telegram. It worries me. I was in Indonesia last week and I was presenting on Bitcoin And, you know, my usual presentations I'd give, half the room were Bitcoin experts. The other half were newbies that were exploring this sector because prices are high. And I was talking, you know, the subjects which I've always been talking about, the difference between Bitcoin banking and, you know, the difference between it and what it's become. And it makes me feel really uneasy now, because once I've done my talk, I see a bunch of people pitching ICOs in the background, and they're using the talk that I was hoping, you know, people might be interested in Bitcoin for, to actually get them start direct into some kind of alt or ICO. And that, you know, that, and then it seems like I'm promoting the sector and these newbies don't really know the difference between the two. And this ICO stuff really concerns me, because without a doubt, we're in a bubble. You know, this is going to be a 90% correction. So, you know, to give you some background, I was at university during the dot-com,
probably more than that. Probably like 100% correction.
I mean, but 100% in crypto, we've seen it just carries on at a few Satoshis, doesn't it? But my father lost all his money in the dot-com boom and bust. He lost his pension, not all of his money, you know, he lost a big chunk of it. And he was a complete retail investor that made a shit ton of money leading up to the dot-com and lost 75% of it during the boom, the bust, sorry.
That's so sad. That is so sad. And how old was he?
Well, my dad today, I don't think I want to disclose it.
At the time?
He was born in 1933, so do the maths.
Right. God, that's terrible.
And so my dad's okay now. You know, he maintained enough.
But how many hours of his life were destroyed? Just like
a lot. And it was one of the most stressful moments of our life. You know, he just watched his. You know, my dad was born into poverty. His bedroom was seven brothers and sisters all on the floor with barely a. You know, he lived in the East End of London and didn't really have much. And he did extremely well in his life. He built a nice wealth pile for his pension. And then timing, he happened to retire around getting interested. He retired around the dot-com boom. And he lost his pension after thinking that he, you know, double tripled it. And then after that, I worked in stockbroking. So I went into the market. I was working for TD Waterhouse.
How do you feel now then? Like, so that now you go to the front of the room. Like, this is one of the reasons why I don't like pitching technology even as much as I used to like noobs.
Yeah.
Cause you know what's on the other end. You know that there's a family out there and that family is going to have lost a lot of opportunity because of these hucksters.
Well, here's the thing. I am very comfortable pitching the concept of how Bitcoin can change the world with a proportionate level of risk that people understand that this is very risky. But it's created this unique store of value. But I'm really upset with where the market's gone in terms of how your words can be minced.
But it's not about being upset, Simon. Because the thing is that like I don't believe in upset. Okay. Like hear me out. No. The thing is that like I feel this is a natural consequence. Like I agree that it's upsetting in the sense that like there's this outcome that is upsetting.
Yeah.
But like, do you see it as just like the natural consequence of like what we've basically advocated? Like, and I'm not Lily White either. You know, I'm not as guilty as you are, fucker. But I'm not as bad. As innocent as some people, you know. I try my best. I really do.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see the ICO. I mean, you know, the ICO stuff. I just didn't see this coming the way that it came, and it came so big. You know, and even now.
Well, who are the promoters? Let's name them. Who are these people? Because I've got names.
The ICOs.
Yeah. Who made it big? Because somebody had to tell these people that this was where their money belonged.
Oh, I don't. Let's say I don't know what the history is. So you got Ethereum. Ethereum. So before that, if you look back at my TEDx talk, May 2014, I talked about the traditional structure of investment as it was in the past, as it is today, and how it might look in the future. And in the future, I talked about there's this emerging thing called ICOs coming up. At that time, it was being used to raise a seed round or the equivalent of a seed round. now what's happened here, is raising, you know, a person with an idea is raising a Series C funding.
Do you think that Max Keiser spent a lot of time promoting these investment opportunities? And do you think Max Keiser gets some degree of responsibility for building up these fanciful notions of great wealth in people's minds?
Well, Max, you know, again, I haven't watched the show for a while, but the shows that I did watch, I know that he started with having John Matonis on to discuss Bitcoin. Then he had...
He went up there and told us about the evil banksters that were out to rob us and take our money and our wealth. And then he started MaxCoin.
Correct.
And then he started these projects.
Correct.
And he used his platform to recruit his audience into pitching these investments that I think you know full well at this point were a little bit dubious in many cases. Do you think that he should have maybe been curtailed by the regulatory structure in his advancement of these investments? Do you think that that's an efficiency too?
These are hard questions.
I don't think they're hard. They're hard for you because he's your friend and you still want to be his friend. And if he sees this, and he probably will, you would be less inclined to be his friend. What do you want out of Max at this point? Like, what do you owe him? You want more press?
No. I mean, I haven't gone on the Keiser Report for a while. I don't intend to. You know, we're happy with where the business is right now. We're thankful to Max for what we, you know, the exposure he gave us at the time. We're just really, we find it really unfortunate the way the venture that he put on Bank to the Future has turned out. And so,
if I recall. He said that like Starcoin would have like a $1 billion market cap and there was like a floor kind of thing, a $20 million,
These things can't go on our platform, but it's very hard to control what's said in the social media.
Do you think you have a responsibility though now to start naming names and start shaking out bad actors? Like you recognize the problem.
Yeah.
You are reformed theoretically and now you have the knowledge. So now you're at this point in your career where you have to decide, are you going to like double down and are you going to try to continue to either leave the status quo, or are you going to try to make changes to prevent people from losing money in the future? That's a good question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah. We're very clear about our model. We're very happy with the model at Bank to the Future. We're very happy with what we're doing at the moment. We've learned from things in the past. And I think the coming on your show and talking like this is the first step. And I think I'm more than happy to give more and more content. But, you know, I've got to be careful as well because my job is not to leak confidential shareholder information. My job is only to talk about what's in the public.
I'm going to try something. I never tried this on the show before. All right, you ready? Uh-oh. We're going to try this. We'll see what happens.
Experimenting with me?
I don't know. It may not work. It may work really well.
Yeah.
If you believe that Max Keiser isn't fully responsible for the investment that was placed in your platform in Starcoin, so on and so forth, will you say the words, I fully support Max Keiser in his prior promotion of these securities on his show?
No.
Okay, so you would not fully support Max Keiser. I get that that's wordplay, but everybody wants more directness in this, and it sounds like you acknowledge that Max Keiser has a very direct role.
Yeah, you put me on the spot. I'm trying to manage in my head the different, you know, processes here. Our job is to try and get the best outcome for investors at this point. And, yeah, you know, saying bad things and doing the wrong actions might not support that, what I'm trying to get.
Yeah, but here's the thing is you've got a community now to manage that is probably going to require that you cut off Max Keiser. So, like, you're going to have to make that decision
I see. So, you know, Bitcoin Capital, the way we set it up, Max was a share, you know, well, Starcoin Holdings was a shareholder. That tie is disconnected with Max now. Starcoin Holdings was a customer. He's no longer part of Starcoin Holdings, as far as I can tell at this point. And I don't see us, you know, raising finance for any ventures at this point. It would be counterproductive. So, and I think he should just focus on what he does really well, which is,
You can say, hey, Chris, you know what? I get that these are hard questions and some of this is out of my control. I'm going to do everything that I can do to get Max Keiser on your show so you can ask him directly.
I'll give that commitment to you. I haven't heard from him. I don't know whether I'll succeed. But
How about Carl? Can you get Carl on the show?
I will certainly ask that question because I'd like to see.
Okay, that would be good. I'd appreciate that. Let's talk about one last thing here, I think, towards the end. What, realistically, there's a lot of people who end up holding the bag in this space, and not just on this project or the Start Chat project or any of these things. Is there any way to take someone's money other than greed or force?
That's a philosophy question. Is there any other way
fart.
To take...
It's a fart is what it has. On this show, that's called a fart.
Okay, so it's a fart. Is there any way to take someone's money other than greed and force? When you say take, you mean not them voluntarily give it to you? Or...
You start a Ponzi and you want to suck out money from the economy. You say to people, I will make you more money. So that's just like, swoop, like a vacuum. It all comes in. And then you say thank you, and then you'd have to resort to force. Is there another way to get that money if not through greed?
I don't know. Chris, yeah.
I think the answer might be no. I'm not sure. Guys, if you have an answer to that question, I'd love to hear it because there may be some cases, but certainly some minority of cases. And I'd like to know. I'd like to even explore those cases where people have lost money from something other than greed and force because I think that that's generally like a hole in the human consciousness or something. I've seen this here many times. I don't know why it's like that, but I see it time and time again. And I don't know, to that end too, Simon, like, what do you think? Like, I've recognized in myself the greed that has caused me to lose money. And as I get a little bit more responsible, as I get older, I take more responsibility. Do you think that that's also true for investors, that is, in fact, a mature way of dealing
with
loss?
Yeah, and I think the investors that we have on our platform, we're really comfortable of the level of sophistication they have in the market. The questions that they're asking of the companies on the forum. And because we have a forum, you know, the people that are more knowledgeable on a certain topic can provide some of the DD for the ones that maybe, you know, we've got two types of investor. We've got rich people that have made a lot of finance, they're interested in fintech. And then we've got a lot of people that have generated wealth in the crypto sector. And the ones that have generated wealth in the crypto sector can sometimes provide the DD. And the ones that are really into traditional finance can provide some of the DD on the forum, and they kind of bounce off each other well. And we have a higher minimum investment, and we have strict policies to make sure that the right investors are coming in right now. And, you know, we do questionnaires to make sure that they understand the risks. And we don't tend to go around, you know, we talk about the companies we've invested in after the fact. But we tend not to go on shows talking about them while they're actually live and things like that because we're really happy with the community that we've built at Bank to the Future.
I actually have one last question. This is probably an easy one. Last question. Due to the nature of your business now only accepting accredited investment opportunities, do the ICOs cannibalize your investment opportunities? Meaning, do the ICOs take away from the profits that your accredited investors could potentially see in their valuations when they're dealing with these ICOs that have absolutely no pretense of grounding or testing of claims or management?
We've noticed problems between, you know, when you're doing an ICO and you've got equity holders, we've noticed some of these problems.
So then you do think that these ICOs are making your investments less attractive in terms of their returns? To investors?
Oh, there's not to our investors, to the newbie retail investors, certainly. But our investors, they don't have these.
But your investors have the same opportunities.
Well, they do, but they just don't believe in these. I was in a group. Well, they do. And I think they're diversified across both, probably. But the one thing I know about our investors.
I was going to say, what percentage?
They're more than happy.
What percentage of your accredited investors also hold shitcoins? All coins.
That would be a good survey.
100%?
No, definitely not.
I would bet 100%
most
of them.
Almost 80% of our investments are done with fiat, not with crypto. We're not.
But even still, I think that those are people that would also be inclined to buy Ethereum
Factum. I reckon definitely they got a portfolio in these things, and some of them have done very well. I think
So then they have finite resources, Simon, and so I would think that you would consider that these people who are making extraordinary claims and creating returns in these like very positions would in fact be making your pitches less palatable to these investors.
Well, our companies. The difference is, I guess, yes, you've definitely done that, but we haven't seen a decrease in investment activity on our platform. We focus on deals that have you know, most of them have got VC funding. We're co-investing on the same terms. And you couldn't get exposure to that asset class via an ICO.
Well, so. You should consider that I think that you would have had more money invested if these people weren't diverting some of their capital to shitcoins.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, we've got...
But if I'm right, here's what I would tell you. If I'm right, you have a fiduciary duty to start cracking down on these ICOs. That means that you yourself have a responsibility to the users of Bank to the Future to take a leadership position in petitioning various federal agencies to curtail these investment opportunities, because those people are hurting your business. You're following regulations that they don't have to follow, and it's coming a consequence to your sales. Now, I'm not going to do that because I don't do that kind of shit, but that's probably your fiduciary duty. Take it or leave it. It's my suggestion.
Probably, as usual, some inconvenient truths that need to be pondered.
Simon,
this is my first thing on ICOs that I've stepped out to talk about. I think I'm going to be producing more content on this. And, you know, I'm not too concerned because we're in a bubble. The bubble's going to burst. We've seen this before in the dot-com boom and bust. And I tell you what does scare me. The consequences of all these retail investors losing all their money in ICOs and complaining to regulators. And because these ICOs are the, you know, I was in a Telegram group the other day I find these Telegram groups really hard to manage, but I was just reading some comments on the Blockchain Capital. A comment was, 1,000% returns is a bit too conservative for me. I need 1,000x returns.
I believe that.
That person can only be 15 or 14 and never, this is their first asset class they've ever touched. Because you can't say that if you've invested in something else. You can't, you know, and so here's my fear. ICOs will become a security. The regulators aren't going to say, oh, okay, everyone can now do an ICO and we'll go home and pack our bags and close this division. If ICO does disrupt, then it will become a security, in which case there's no real efficiency improvement because a registered security can't be transferred peer-to-peer. It can't have retail investors. It can only have a certain type of investor. So, you know, there's no real efficiency in the ICO other than the ability to take a very risky model to bring in retail investors. And my fear is once that actually comes down, we're going to have some sweeping regulations that say, you know, how are you going to distinguish between a token that is a security, a currency, a technology? And if you say ICOs are securities, what does that mean for Bitcoin? And then what does that mean for the company? You know, it's just, this is going to look bad on our sector. And, you know, these ICOs, when they all crash, everyone's going to say that Bitcoin stupid, you know, that was that Bitcoin.
I've been saying that for a while. I've been taking every VC in the space, one way or another, either publicly or in side channels. I've been telling them, this is going to fall on you fuckers when this thing explodes. You're all going to have to deal with a bunch of bullshit because you didn't speak up at all. And then now that the house of cards fell down, you the one who is probably doing, you know, even an exemplary job in many cases, are going to have to deal with all the bullshit because those guys are going to be fly by night. They're going to get the fuck out and you're going to be stuck holding a bag on all kinds of regulatory crap you didn't have to do prior. So I wish more people like yourself would probably talk about that amongst each other. But I mean, realistically, it's so big at this point that I don't even know what the fuck you can do about it other than wait for it to happen. So I get that.
Yeah.
Well, look, Simon, you did really good on the show. I think a lot of people wanted me to roast you, and maybe I did. But you know what? You were seemingly very transparent. There's a couple of things a little loose. I would like people to do some fact checking. Okay. Let's see if I got swindled. I don't think so, though, because I can see that Simon Dixon of 2017 is a very different Simon Dixon that I've seen prior. And I like this Simon Dixon so far. I'm pretty impressed here. I think you still got a little bit of bullshit going on, but not nearly as much as you once had. And that's okay, because I used to have a lot of bullshit too, so I know how it is. Guys, learn more about Simon Dixon. Simon Dixon, tell people where they can find out about you.
I'm on Twitter at Simon Dixon Twit. That's probably the best place. Google my name. I'm easy to find.
Simon, thanks for coming on Bitcoin Uncensored.
Okay, thanks, Chris.